NFL on Off the Ball with Subway. Be the QB of the NFL party and arrive with a 6-foot giant sub.
Well, that was a pretty long off-season for pigskin lovers, but it is finally over. The contract holdouts, they continue. The massive contracts have been signed. And every week between now and the Super Bowl, we're going to be here bringing you analysis, reaction, news, and some fantasy advice. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet me directly at Jerry Gilroy. Of course, you can tweet the show at Off the Ball as well. It is the NFL show here on Off the Ball, and over this week and next week in particular, we've got some very big names to help kick us off. A quick reminder that our NFL preview is brought to you in association with Subway, official partner of the NFL London Games. We are going to be sending some very lucky listeners to the NFL Games in London, courtesy of our friends at Subway. So stay tuned to offtheball.com and our social channels for that, and of course to the radio show in the evening for details of how you can win that competition. It's the Eagles against the Jags, which is actually an amazing game. It's the Super Bowl champions against one of the best defenses in the league. It's the Titans against the Chargers, maybe for the purists, but I think I'm particularly interested in that one for various reasons. And then the Raiders against the Seahawks. Will John Gruden's Raiders be as good as John Gruden thinks they will? And are the Seahawks as crap as everybody else thinks they are? I suspect not, is the answer from the Seahawks' perspectives. A little bit later on, we're going to hear from Jason Bell. Next week, we've got OCU and Yura on the show. So the two stars of the BBC coverage are going to be with us for the next couple of weeks. But a regular feature on the show over the next 20 weeks or so is going to be our very own Cian Fahey. So this week, we're going to preview the AFC. Next week, we'll preview the NFC. And if you've got any questions for us, you can hit myself or Cian up on Twitter. So take it away, Cian. All right, Cian Fahey is here with us to help us preview the AFC this week. We'll bring you the NFC next week. Cian, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I think the only reason I'm back here is your 49ers are trying to look a little bit good.
They're not bad, yeah.
I'm surprised we're doing the AFC first. I thought it would just be a 49ers half hour.
Well, that's what I'm... So what I'm doing is getting all the crap out of the way first, okay, and I'm finishing with the good stuff. That's my strategy here, is like...
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. I think the 49ers will be closer to the crap than...
And now. Come on, but the AFC is crap, right? We can all agree with that.
Well, most of it is.
With the exception of one team, maybe two.
Well, I think the AFC East is probably the best place to start because we've got one good team there, unless you want to work your way up.
No, that's definitely my intention, the AFC East. So let's start. The Bills, the Dolphins, the Patriots, and the Jets. So the Jets have their quarterback of the future, and the Bills have their quarterback of the future, they say.
Yeah, well, I was waiting for that they say part. That's kind of important, because the Bills, if the Bills have the quarterback of their future is pretty bleak, because they've got one of these. So in the NFL, they have the draft process, and they have the combine where they measure guys, they measure how wide their knees are, how big their arms are, how wide their shoulders are, and all this kind of different stuff. And they basically took a quarterback who was a star in being measured, but who couldn't throw the ball. Which is kind of counterintuitive, you would think, for a normal person looking at football. But Josh Allen, the guy they took, played at a lower level of college, really struggled at that level of college, and they drafted him because he's this guy who can throw the ball 70 yards. And they think they can refine him and make him a better player. And part of the problem is they traded up to get that guy, and they gave away pieces of their offense. So they gave away Cordy Glenn, their left tackle. They gave away Tyrod Taylor for basically nothing, who was a better quarterback than the guy they're bringing in. So it's very hard to see how that team's getting better this year.
Okay. So you don't have much hope for the Bills, but the Jets has to be a different situation, right?
You did say start with the crap.
Sam Darnold's the real deal, right?
Sam Darnold is a guy I really like. So Sam Darnold was very clearly the most talented quarterback in the NFL, in the draft this year.
And the youngest.
Yeah, well, I'll take your word on that. I don't know if he's the youngest or not. I tend to just watch what they do in the field. But his big issue was he threw the ball to defenders a lot. So he will go through a game and he will have this drive where he has 6, 7, 8, 9 plays and he does 10, 20 brilliant things on just one drive. And then at the very end, he'll just drop back and throw the ball straight to a linebacker. And you're sat there going, wait, how are you this talented, this good, and still making these decisions? And it's a very difficult thing to project because Jameis Winston is a guy who would have fallen into that category years ago at FSU, threw a lot of interceptions in college.
Andrew Luck,
yeah, that's you have to get more further into the style of the offense with Andrew Luck, because he's kind of put in a situation where he has to throw interceptions just to make the offense work. He has to attack tight windows. But the thing with Darnold is, if he is who he is right now, he'll probably be like a low-level qualities or a low-level starting quarterback, so that's like 25 to 32 or whatever, if you're going to rank them out that way. And if he actually develops and gets rid of that one little flaw he has, he has the potential to be one of the best in the league. But the interesting thing there is Teddy Bridgewater is coming back. From 2 years ago, Teddy Bridgewater had a training camp injury with his knee where he basically tore all the ligaments in his knee, and there was questions about amputating his leg. He was not expected to ever play again. And he's come back and he's looked pretty good in the first two preseason games. It's preseason, but when you're talking about a guy who you already know is a good quarterback, it's about how his leg looks and how comfortable he looks. And he looks completely comfortable.
Yeah, so the situation at the Jets has gone from being a complete basket case to actually a competent, well-run organization in quite a short period of time. Again, just really emphasizing you need your front office and your head coach to have some kind of alignment. If you don't have that, you're at absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but it also speaks to the amazing thing that we do, where if you've got some bit of talent at quarterback, we think you're a well-run organization. Whereas if you don't have a quarterback, we think you're a complete nightmare and disaster.
Yeah.
The Jets do look like they're in a decent position, and they're kind of, I personally think they were lucky that the Browns passed on Darnold, because I think he was more talented than Baker Mayfield, who the Browns took first overall. And then you had Saquon Barkley, who went second. So they were in a nice spot where they were picking third. They weren't clearly the worst team in the league. They kind of overachieved last year, so their roster is something that they can grow. They've got Robbie Anderson, Jermaine Kearse at wide receiver. You've got some defensive talent there, not as much as they used to have, but they have blocks to build around. This year is probably not going to be the year they make the playoffs, but it's a team that's in a nice position, a better position than the Bills anyway.
I've heard a range of outcomes from the Dolphins, from them picking first to them actually having a really good season.
Someone else besides me is picking them first? I think I'm the only one in the world picking them first.
As in, they will be picking first in the draft.
Oh, no, wait, sorry.
Yeah, you're
picking them first in the AFC East.
Are you?
Yeah. Well,
you're definitely the only person in the world.
Look, at some point, the Patriots have to come second, all right? I want to be ahead of the curve and claim I knew all along. I think they have a chance to win the AFC East. Obviously, the Patriots are the favourites. So the big thing for me, obviously Ryan Tannehill is coming back from an ACL tear. Ryan Tannehill is one of these guys who suffers from the way NFL and America looks at the quarterback position. They use the whole offense and project that onto the individual starter. And he's been in awful offenses since he's been drafted. Offenses that simply don't work. And the best way I can explain that is he's behind an offensive line where he needs 3 seconds to make this play work, and the offensive line gives him 1.5. So there's nothing he can do within reason to make the play work, and that's been a problem throughout his career. I think they've improved the offense around him, and he's coming back from the ACL tear. He looks pretty good. If he's healthy, he's got a great deep ball. He throws it accurately. He's very good against pressure, and he can be a consistent starter. But the big change for them, assuming Tannehill is okay and healthy, the big change for them is in that secondary, where Xavien Howard looks like he's going to be one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Long, physical, athletic cornerback who can line up on the line of scrimmage and push wide receivers around and bully them. And then they drafted Minka Fitzpatrick in the first round, who was one of the best players in the Alabama team, which generally, Alabama is a little bit of a thing that gets overrated and then can be a little bit underrated at times when you're coming out of the draft, because they're obviously the best college team. But Mike Fitzpatrick looked like a star at Alabama, and he looks like he's going to immediately be a quality player for them.
He's a linebacker, is he?
He is a safety who plays slot cornerback. So in the NFL now, because everyone's passing the ball, he can basically be a linebacker for you, because you don't need these big run-stopping guys. And that's the beauty of this defense to me, is they've got TJ McDonald there who can play in the box. They've got Rashad Jones, who's going to play deep and is a deep line safety, who's a very good player as well. The only concern they have in their secondary is the second cornerback, which they're talking about getting Bashaud Breeland. They might have signed him. They might have signed him by now last night if they did. And then you have in the defensive front, you've added Robert Quinn. Even though you've lost Ndamukong Suh, you've got a better pass rusher. Maybe Sue's a better overall player, but having that impact pass rusher is a big deal.
So, you think the Dolphins have vastly improved? Have they improved enough to catch the Patriots when everybody? Every year since Brady basically took over has been like the Patriots are going to win this division, and almost every year, 100% of the time, you're right.
It's about as safe as backing the All Blacks has been on the Patriots, especially in the AFC, and especially like you talked about, these three teams in that division with them are so consistently poorly run that it's very hard to pick any of them. I do think they've got an actual chance. I don't know if they're going to take it from them. I don't know if it's going to be a situation where...
Why are the Patriots coming back to the crowd?
Well, if you look at the team, right now they've got a roster where you've got Brady who's a star, you've got Gronk who's a star, you've got Devin McCourty who is probably not considered a star, but he's one of the best safeties in the league, and then you've got probably Shaq Mason and maybe one more player, Stephon Gilmore, someone like that. And after that, you've got a lot of ordinary bodies there. Yes, Belichick will get the most out of them, he'll make them all play well as a unit, and they will be a good team in relative to the AFC, but this is not the Patriots teams of before, where they're a juggernaut, where you'd expect them to blow all these teams out and win the division easily.
Yeah, their defense was actually
one of the worst in the league last year.
Really bad. Yeah,
we talked about it before the Super Bowl. The Eagles steamrolled them largely because that defense couldn't do anything.
And they haven't really vastly improved it this year.
No, well, they've got Derek Rivers, who was, I believe, injured last year. They've got a new linebacker whose name escapes me right now, who's going to add a little bit of speed to them. But overall, it's still a defense that doesn't have stars. Like they brought in Danny Shelton from the Browns, who is a failed first-round pick with the Browns. Yeah, Belichick is obviously going to take him, coach him better than Hugh Jackson, Greg Williams did, but it's still Danny Shelton. It's not Aaron Donald. It's not like some guy who's going to come in and dominate and change the game for them.
Okay, so are you quite sticking your neck out and saying the Dolphins are going
as much as I ever stick my neck out, really, when it comes to predictions.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go from east to west. So this is the Broncos, the Chiefs, the Chargers, and the Raiders. This is definitely going to be a very interesting division this year, at least because of the Hollywood element. When you spend $100 million on a coach, then you're putting buns on seats in Vegas.
Well, we're
still in Oakland, though. So is this like a free season for Gruden to kind of like just make sure that we're in any way competitive so that when we go to Vegas, we have some sense of being able to... I mean, look, we should fess up, right? We're recording this a couple of weeks before it gets played, so we don't know what the situation is with Khalil Mack.
And that was my awkward transition with Bashaud Breeland a while ago as well. So John Gruden could have had a very easy off-season for himself if he was just kind of quiet and went through and did kind of more traditional, normal things. But that's not really John Gruden.
Exactly.
He's been at ESPN. So if you're not familiar with John Gruden, and that's the thing you have to say, you know, because it's been so long since John Gruden was a coach. He's been a commentator for, the best part of a decade, maybe more?
Yeah.
And the league has changed an awful lot since he was last here. And you'll notice that in some of the player acquisitions they had this year and some of the moves they made. The one that really stood out to me was bringing in Jordy Nelson. And then they brought... bringing in Jordy Nelson at this stage of his career is not...
So I heard a theory that Jordy Nelson is not actually there to be on the field of play, but he's there to be in the change room to sit beside
Josh McCown role.
To sit beside Amari Cooper and go, really, are you, you're leaving? But it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, you've got to be here until 8 o'clock. You've got to be down at Derek Carr's gaff having chats with him and like having dinner with him and knowing what he's about to say before he says it.
So we're about, 10 minutes in and we've got gritty wide receiver talk already with the work rate and coach's son and stuff. Look, that might be part of it and they've got Mark
Is that Hibbs. Bollocks? You think that's bollocks? That doesn't really happen in...
No, I think it does happen. I'm not sure it works. That's kind of like Josh McCown has been doing that for the last 6 years and the best quarterback Josh McCown has worked with is Mike Glennon. So if you, and Josh McCown is, I'm not saying Josh McCown.
His fault though.
Yeah, I mean, probably not, but that kind of speaks to how limited that idea is. And Josh McCown is not just celebrated as someone who's good in the locker room, he is like God's gift of being good in the locker room.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really done any major impact. And my thought on that is, if you want a player to do something like that, hire him as a coach. Like, there are plenty of players who retire who can be assistant coaches or whatever, and put them in there. But we're kind of getting off the actual topic of the Raiders here, where... The Raiders' big problem is Khalil Mack is holding out, like you said. Whether he gets back on the field or not is not actually that relevant to their overall execution on the field because he's going to be on the field. Let's say they have Mack on the field and he's there week one and he's dominant and he's great like he always is. But there's still 10 guys around him who can't play. So it can work a little bit on offense when it's like that, but when it's on defense, what they'll do is they'll just work around you and work away from you and take advantage of guys like Kerryon Conley who need to be better and guys like Reggie Nelson who's at safety who's too old at this point and you've got Bruce Irvin there who's a more celebrated name than his player at this point. So the Raiders to me are a team that are going to take a step back and a big part of this is they invested so much money in Derek Carr, so much money in all their different offensive line pieces, which isn't a major problem in terms of the offensive line, but Carr isn't good enough. And when you have all that money tied up in the offensive line, it's very hard to get better in other areas.
So they should have traded away from Carr?
They can't at this point, and I don't think they ever would, just because once you have a certain level of production as a quarterback in the NFL, you're kind of safe.
Gruden's there for 10 years, though. Like, he's got a 10-year deal, so if he wanted to, if he didn't think... I wouldn't be terribly surprised if at the end of this season, if Carr falls a little bit below what Gruden wants, because he's in the position to make changes, and also he can go to the ownership and say, if you want to go to Vegas, we need to be winning games. If you want to sell out week in, week out, we've got to be winning games.
So the reason I don't think that will happen is Carr has that type of skill set where every coach is going to think they can fix him. So Carr's biggest issue is his footwork. He's really poor at reacting to pressure, and he had a great offensive line, and that's kind of what carried him. But when his feet break down, it negates all of his arm strength. It negates any accuracy that he can have. That quick release that he can muster up doesn't actually have any impact.
Yeah.
So, but I look at that and I go, it's been 3 years. His footwork isn't better. A coach looks at that and goes, hey, my ego, I can fix that. I can make him better. And that's why guys like that hang around forever. That's why Jay Cutler was in the league for 12 years.
This division is actually going to be really interesting because...
And we're talking about the worst team.
I know. So there's the Broncos.
Broncos are there.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell to think about the Broncos, but we'll come back to them because the Chiefs obviously changed their quarterback. They have Mahomes. They have this explosive offense. They're going to be really good to watch.
Very good chance of being the best team in the league. But Mahomes needs to be an average quarterback. So Mahomes is in a very nice position of, he's in an Andy Reid offense, so everything's going to be simplified for him. Like, same with Alex Smith last year. There's going to be a lot of misdirection, a lot of play action, a lot of screens, a lot of... one of the things I charted last year was how often a quarterback threw the ball within 1 and 20 yards past the line of scrimmage. And basically, the idea of doing that is you're throwing into the thick of the coverage. That's where the linebackers and safeties are. So if you're throwing behind the line of scrimmage and throwing deep more often, and you're doing it with clearly defined plays where the route combinations work with each other to pull the coverage apart, you've got an easier job as a quarterback. Andy Reid is the best in the league at doing that. It's how Doug Peterson took pieces from Andy Reid's offense to win with the Eagles. But for Patrick Mahomes, that means you only have to be average to be great in terms of your production. And then you throw in, they've got Sammy Watkins, one of the best receivers in the league, has never had the production because his coaches, well, some of his coaches didn't know how to use him. And Sean McVay last year used him to stretch the defense and open it up. That's why they went out and got Brandon Cooks, because they need that speed element. He created space for Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp to work in. So you've got Sammy Watkins, and you've got Tyreek Hill, and you've got Travis Kelce. That, and Kareem Hunt in the backfield. That's the best skill position group in the league. If Mahomes, Mahomes, similar to Derek Carr, big question marks on his footwork, big question marks on his accuracy, because when his feet break down, everything else breaks down. So if he can just be that little bit better than he was in college, he will be able to put up huge numbers, and they'll be a very, very good, hard offense to stop.
Okay, we don't have enough time to go through absolutely everything here, but the Chargers
stop talking so much.
The Chargers were really good at the end of last season, when it was too late for them to actually qualify for the playoffs. They lost Hunter Henry, but they're still actually a dangerous team this year. And the Broncos, I don't know what to believe about the Broncos.
The Chargers are like picking Mayo to win the All-Ireland. You can't do it. I can go through the Chargers' whole roster and tell you how talented they are and how great they are. In 2 months, half of them are going to be hurt. And for the remaining 2 months, the guys who are talented won't play to their ability. It's the same thing every single year for the last 5 years. This is like the one thing with the NFL where I won't go in detail and analysis and trust that. I will just go up there to Chargers. They're going to mess up because they always do.
Yeah, it's...
I've been beaten down.
It's the lads, it's Tottenham, Alex Ferguson.
That's what I was going to think of as well, but I thought Tottenham were doing good now, so people might not get that.
Back in the day, though. Okay, so I don't know what to think of Denver, and we'll come back in more detail.
Denver don't matter.
When I go through this, I started off by being a little bit facetious about how the AFC was a bit crappy, but actually, these four divisions all have really interesting things happening in them. Next, we'll go north, and we'll finish with the good stuff in the south. So this is Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and the Steelers. Cleveland, everybody's talking about because of Hard Knocks and because of the situation there, but have they found a quarterback?
In Tyrod, yes, for the short term. Baker Mayfield's very interesting to me, and I hope he's a good player because I like his skill set, a lot of the things he does. So one of the things he's brilliant with is his footwork. I'm talking a lot about footwork here, but it's important with the quarterback. So that allows him to move around the pocket and react to pressure and throw the ball off a strong platform, but I'm not sure he has the arm strength, I'm not sure he has the accuracy to be a consistently great or a consistently good NFL player. And he's not tall, which normally I don't care about that. But if you're a short quarterback in the NFL, you have to be like Russell Wilson in his prime. You have to be able to throw a great deep ball and be able to like run and scramble and extend plays. And I don't think he's capable of doing that consistently against NFL athletes. It very much feels like the Browns are in a rush to get back to 8-8 after purposely losing the past 2 years. Yeah. And the point of purposely losing the past 2 years was so you didn't just become an 8-8 team. And the whole thing, like we were talking about poorly run organizations, that's the Browns right now.
Yeah, so whenever Hugh Jackson gets the bullet, they might be able to...
Todd Haley's right there waiting for him.
Well, it does look like he's conniving in the background.
Well, the amazing thing is, Greg Williams is still the worst coach there, and they might give him the job, which will actually get worse.
That wouldn't be incredibly out of keeping with the character of how the organization has been run. What about the Steelers? What's the truth about them? Where are they?
The defense is improving. The big question mark there is Ben Roethlisberger. He got Todd Haley fired in the offseason. He didn't want to work for him anymore. And then he suddenly stopped talking about retirement, which is fine, I guess. But now he's got someone who's a good friend of his being the offensive coordinator. And I'm not necessarily sure Roethlisberger understands that he's a different type of quarterback than he was in his prime. Haley was doing the right things with him. He was having very controlled, very structured offense, a lot of screens, a lot of short throws. I think Ben is probably going to try and be who he was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and that's not going to work. They've also got this Le'Veon Bell thing hanging over them, and we don't know how that's going to play out.
Yeah, all right. Baltimore picked up a quarterback at the end of the first round in the draft in Lamar Jackson, who has been...
That's what I'm talking about, RG3.
...has been exciting everybody, and they're trying to get the two of them on the field at the same time. That's surely just a red herring.
So that's the kind of thing you do when you realize your current starting quarterback isn't good enough anymore, but you don't really have the balls to get rid of him, I guess. So Flacco, there's a lot of talk about Flacco being rejuvenated and being fully healthy. And it's not something I buy because health is too big. It hasn't been... His decline has coincided with winning the Super Bowl. It hasn't coincided with him getting injured. His footwork has gone to hell. His accuracy has gone to hell. He throws the ball and reads coverages. He just doesn't care.
Are they just trying to get Flacco to week 4 or week 5 when somebody else's quarterback goes down, and then you can have him for a fourth-round pick?
That might be it, but again, he's one of these strong-arm quarterbacks who teams don't give up on. But Lamar Jackson's really interesting too. So Flacco there is probably going to start and be a barrier for a year ahead of Jackson. And that might be the best thing for him, because like, Jackson has this phenomenal deep ball, and he has this... Everyone, like if you're any sort of a college football fan, you know exactly what he does best. He's elusive, he's explosive, he runs away from everyone on the field. That'll work in the NFL, because he's that level of athlete where he's going to be able to beat everyone. But he still has to refine all the other elements of his game. And maybe sitting for half a year, maybe sitting for a full year helps him in the long term. So maybe the Ravens might not really care how good Flacco is and just kind of ride him out and let him have his final year.
So they're happy to have an 8-8 season, pick somewhere closer to the top rather than the bottom.
I reckon they saw what happened with the Chiefs last year and with Alex Smith having his best season, and they thought, oh, we'll do that and we'll get the best out of Flacco and we'll have the best of both worlds.
Well, maybe that works. Okay, so finally for the AFC South, this has the Jacksonville Jaguars, which... have become an unbelievably interesting team from the absolute laughingstock of the entire 32 teams. Now, suddenly, they're really good. They seem to be a very well-run organization. They have some old-school smarts and some new-school analytics in the owner's son and Tom Coughlin.
And they have some Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, the trash-talkingest trash-talker in the league at the moment. And you've got to like them.
Yeah, and then I'm kind of focusing on the quarterbacks again, but then you've got to talk about the quarterback who they literally were scared of throwing the ball in the AFC Championship game last year. Like, they should have beaten the Patriots in the AFC Championship game last year, but with Bortles, it's too much of a challenge. That's kind of the concern with them. So you know the defense is great. You assume the defense is going to sustain some level of that effectiveness and that efficiency and that execution, but you can't determine that they're going to be dominant again. And if they're not dominant again, the offense suddenly has to carry them a little bit more. Now, they added another offensive lineman, so they're going to run the ball a lot more again. Fournette's probably going to have a huge year. I could see him ending up with 400 carries or whatever, just something crazy number that we haven't seen since the Danny and Tomlinson, just because that's how their offense is structured. And that might work. In the AFC, that might work. It wouldn't work in the NFC, but that's, again, like you talked about, the AFC is much worse than the NFC.
It's not, though. When you start going through the teams, is it really that much worse?
They're not good.
Like, are they not good?
You want to talk yourself into the Bills and Josh Allen?
No, I'm going to talk myself into Houston.
My Dolphins pick in the AFC.
I'm going to talk myself into the Titans defense. I'm going to talk myself into the Chargers defense if they're fit. I know it's a big fit. If.
I hope you talk yourself into the Chargers. I will get 3 months out of that if you do. All right.
So what about the Colts situation? Everything depends on the quarterback.
I've no idea if he's going to be healthy. No one knows if he's going to stay healthy. He looked good in the preseason, and he's in this new offense. And this is the big key. So the thing that's probably the most overlooked thing in football is the schemes, is how each offense is run. And I try and boil it down into what each player is asked to do. That's when someone says this is their scheme, it just means the player is either asked to throw short, throw deep, throw intermediate. That's simplifying it down. But what Andrew Luck is getting now is, what it used to happen is, he would get the ball, he'd probably line up under center, he'd have three tight ends around him, and he'd have this 7-8 step drop where he's got to drop back, hold onto the ball forever, wait for these slow route combinations to come open, and he's got to throw the ball to one player in between two and three defenders. And offense, it just doesn't work. Yeah. It's something that doesn't work in this, especially not in this NFL. And now they're going to the complete opposite. He's going to be in shotgun. He's going to have 3 and 4 wide receivers. He's going to have 2 tight ends on the field a lot of the time. There's going to be option plays where he can either run or pass based on how the defense lines up. And he's going to be able to throw receivers open and elevate his offensive line.
His offensive line's good as well, for a change.
Yes. Well, the interior looks very good. They got Quentin Nelson in the draft, who is... Although we've had this before, we've had this with Jonathan Cooper, we've had this with...
He could be overrated.
Chance Warmack. Like, we've had these great, godly guards who just turn out to be...
Grand.
Yeah, because they can overwhelm guys in college, and then you come up against NFL athletes and they can't overwhelm them.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to adjust.
Yeah, give me McGlinchey any day.
There we go.
So, Houston, again, so many ifs about health. If...
Deshaun.
If Deshaun Watson comes back, if Clowney and Watt are fit at the same time, then suddenly... That defense looks great. That offense looks great. You have a team.
Yeah, but...
A lot of ifs.
Yeah, but it's not just that there are a lot of ifs. So, like, we always have the unknown with injuries, but look at J.J. Watt's list of injuries at this point. And the one thing you can't get hurt, for anyone in the NFL, really, is you can't get your back hurt. as a defensive lineman, you cannot have a bad back.
Yeah.
Because every single play you're going down on three, on one end and two legs and bending in your, it's always back, it's all back work, and you have to be explosive. I don't think there's any chance of him being one of the best players in the league again.
Before we wrap up, that the Tennessee managed to actually do something really good. They reached the playoffs and they didn't just stick with the coaching tickets, and they've put a new scheme in that's going to help their young quarterback succeed.
They actually looked at what was happening on the field instead of just going by the results. And again, that's a dangerous thing in the AFC because it's easy to get into wild card positions in the AFC. But very quickly on Marcus Mariota's in this new scheme, like we just talked about, he was similar to Luck in an awful situation for him, the worst possible situation for him. He's a bad deep ball, and they emphasize the deep ball. Now they're going to emphasize shorter and intermediate throws, and it's going to be a lot better for him. The big concern I have with them is they hired the Texans' defensive coordinator, Mike Vrabel, to be their head coach. And the biggest problem the Texans had last year wasn't guys getting hurt. It was Jadeveon Clowney lining up at inside linebacker. It was the safeties being moved to double-team the slot so there was no one in the middle of the field. It was just nonsense stuff. But that doesn't mean he's going to be a bad head coach, because there are a lot of cases of guys who are great offensive coordinators who are terrible head coaches. And then there's a guy like John Harbaugh who was never a coordinator and was a really good head coach. So it might not be that, it might not be that simple to predict from him being bad here, so he's going to be this bad here. Hopefully he'll be better.
Okay, so if it's not the Patriots, who will be the representative of the AFC in the Super Bowl?
I think we probably just have to go to Patriots. Or my Dolphins, yes, I'm going to ride this Dolphins wave.
All right, that's the
AFC. After all that, it's just the Patriots.
That's the AFC, we'll do the NFC next week. All right, you're very welcome back. If you want to get in touch with us here on the NFL show on Off the Ball, you can just tweet me at Jerry Gilroy, or you can tweet at Off the Ball as well. Next week, Keenan is going to be looking at how the NFC is going to go. It's unbelievably deep this year, so you could make a case for any one of a number of contenders in that one. And next week as well, we're also going to hear from OC Imanura. First, though, we caught up with OC's sidekick slash equal billing star, Jason Bell. Here's how the conversation went. All right, it's time for us to say hello to our very first big guest of the season. It's Jason Bell, star of the BBC's coverage. Jason, what's the crack? How you doing?
Hey, I like when I hear "what's the crack." That means it's I'm with a friendly bunch.
There you go. That's exactly it. And I knew you were one of the few Americans who would get what I'm talking about. Because, of course, while we can talk NFL, I know all of our Irish audience is just interested in your Irish connections.
Oh, I have some serious Irish connections, as you know. I mean, I'm almost Irish, you know. My whole family's Irish now. So, you know, I feel good about the Irish. I love them.
Do you get over here at all? Do you get dragged over on family visits and all that kind of stuff? Do you know your way around the back streets of Derry at this point?
Yeah, you know, I do. I've been to Derry so many times. I can get around. I always got a tour guide, so it's always cool. I'm always well taken care of and chauffeured around. But I love Derry. I love the people.
I was looking at your Twitter feed and I couldn't help notice that you had an interview with Leonard Fournette ahead of the London Games a little bit later on this year. And I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about him and the Jags generally and some of the defensive trends. But I was interested because Fournette is one of those characters who had a very big reputation, picked very early in the draft and started the season last year with a lot of trash talk. But as the season wore on, he was one of those players who suddenly realized that being brilliant for a few weeks isn't all that the NFL requires from you. You've got to do it week in, week out. When you talked to him this year, was he a slightly calmer version of himself? Had he learned a bit from that first season?
Absolutely. You know, that first season is tough. You got to kind of figure out who you are and what you are, and your body hasn't endured that many games, especially at running back, taking those kind of hits. So this off season, he talked about his diet and how he really worked on that and getting his body ready to sustain itself for the full season.
Your own NFL career is, I think, one of those really interesting stories that so often doesn't kind of get talked about that much. You were an undrafted free agent, so for you, making the team was kind of a constant difficulty, a kind of constant thing that you had to work on. And I guess that's one of those, you know, we focus so much on the superstars of the game, but these rosters, particularly at this stage of the season when the 90-man roster gets cut down to 53, whatever it is, like there are so many players who are actually struggling to make the team before we actually get to hear about them. What's that career like? What's that moment in your career like when you look back on it retrospectively?
You know, even you talking about it just brought back some serious memories. You just don't know how hard it is. I mean, when you look back at your career, you're like, I could have got cut at any moment. And so many things have to go right as an undrafted free agent. a lot of it is just health. You got to be healthy. You got to stay on the field, give yourself an opportunity to be looked at. That's a big part of it, because most of the time you make it because somebody got hurt. You got your opportunity and you made the most of it. And that's what I did in my case in Dallas. Someone went down. I was playing very well on special teams. You have to show that as an undrafted free agent, because you're probably not going to be a starter. So you have to show what you can do on special teams, stay on the field, and give it your all.
Because you're on special teams for a couple of years before you actually end up getting like a starter role. The whole notion of this, I think, is something that, again, that's really interesting. Like, just listening to a lot of people now talking about, if you want to know who's going to make the team, check in the preseason who's getting the special teams reps. Who do they trust to go out there on special teams? Because they're the guys who can fulfill a bunch of different roles who you want on your 53-man roster. What were your thought processes when you were trying to make yourself useful on special teams while at the same time trying to impress as somebody who could play at safety or who could play even a cornerback?
You know, it's all about the veterans on the team. If you have a team of good veterans, they'll let you know. They'll tell you, hey, you better go out there on special teams because that's your way to make it happen. Don't take time off and don't slack in these special teams drills, because this is truly your only option. So for me, that's what I heard. Darren Woodson, all-pro safety, arguably a Hall of Famer, he was the one who told me, hey, you look good at corner, but you need to go out here and be good at special teams. And that's what I did. I had already had experience at UCLA in my early career playing special teams, so I knew how to execute some of the techniques they needed. And for me, I was really good at downing punts inside of the 10-yard line. So in the preseason game, the punter will punt it up. I could track the ball and catch it in the air. And when you pin a team's offense back inside the 5-yard line, that's really advantageous for your defense. And I became a specialist at that, and I made myself irreplaceable.
How did you get good at that? And how did you decide that that was the thing that was going to be your ticket to getting on the team?
You know, I just knew I had to find a niche. I had to do something better than everyone else. And I saw in the preseason that that was an emphasis. The coach kept talking about that, and he kept saying, if you can do this, and if you know, if this can happen, I thought, well, why don't I just make it happen? So in the drills early on, I started doing it, starting to get comfortable with it. I'd been a punt returner before, so I was very comfortable catching the ball in the air like that. And I just worked on it. And then I had the opportunity in the games in the preseason, like you were saying before, the punter trusted me and we started making it happen, making those kind of plays.
I was reading some stuff from Ross Tucker, who's now with The Athletic, and he was saying that his career ended on special teams and kickoff returns because, again, we have no clue what it's like to be faced into the wall of an entire team returning a kick or trying to defend a kick, or the gunners coming up and launching themselves after a 40 or 50 yard head start and jumping at another human who's largely defenseless in this situation. That's why the whole kickoffs have changed. Is that the scariest moment in a football match and on a football field, when there is a kickoff return happening and everybody is moving as fast as they can and trying to be as big a weapon as they can?
It is for sure, undeniably, before the rule change, the most violent play in football. And I hate to say it, I used to love it. You would run down full speed, and at that time, they could have a four-man wedge, and they would put the four biggest linemen in that wedge, and it was my job at my size to take out two of them. And I had to literally split them and make them fall down and blow the wedge up. And that was my job. You used to sit on film, and the coach would say, did you do your job? Did you blow up the wedge? And the whole team is watching to make sure you did it. And you would, like you said, you'd run down and launch yourself in there, and hopefully you got up to play another play. And I used to enjoy it. Very dangerous, but it was exciting.
That last split second before you launch into the wedge, what's that like?
I mean, you just got to something has to be different about you, because it is suicidal. It is legitimately crazy. And you have to have this element about your personality that you kind of appreciate pain, because it's painful. And you just go in there, and it's just man on man or two on one, and it's who's tougher. And, you know, in film on Monday, everybody was watching it. So you wanted to prove to your teammates that you were as tough as you said you were. And so you went out there and you just blanked. You just blacked out and tried to blow everything up. That's what I used to do.
Notwithstanding the fact that you really enjoyed that, and clearly there's something different about you, are you happy with the rule change now in terms of the longevity of the sport and the safety of the players? Or do you feel the opportunity for players like you to make it is diminished somewhat by the special teams changes?
You know, it's much safer. It's better for the sport. I saw a lot of guys get hurt. A lot of guys get hurt in practice doing those kind of drills. So I like the rule change. I think that, yes, there is some element of special teams that a guy like me with the old rules was able to take advantage of, but I still would have been able to make plays. And what they're doing now, you just have to be athletic and creative. And, you know, it saves your body, which is much better for the sport, especially being a retired guy. You want to have everything in place, and you want to feel good when you retire. So this is good.
The bit earlier on when you talked about you could get cut at any time, that's kind of the way it is, like, as your career goes on as well. So is there any point during seasons where you feel comfortable, like you've made the team, you're playing well, your contract situation is settled, or is there kind of that constant edge about players at your level in the game?
You know, a guy like me, I constantly was on edge. Even when I thought I was going to make the team, it was always a question. Each year, when I was in Houston, one year it was a real battle, and I had a battle with a guy that we did the same thing. And, you know, it was a battle every year, but I was on edge, but I felt a little safe. But the one time I really thought I was safe is when I went to the Giants, and I wasn't safe. It was the probably one of my biggest training camp battles before my rookie year when I had to make the team. I mean, I was fighting with some good guys that played safety. I had just got moved to safety, and that was one of my hardest training camps. And I thought I was a lock to make the team because they wanted me so bad in free agency, but it wasn't like that. So you always have to be ready. Every year you have to go in and you have to fight, because unless you are Tom Brady or guys like that, they're always looking to replace you. So you got to go out there and show them who you are and what you are, and that you are the best on that team at your role. You just got to be good at what they need you to be good at.
I definitely feel like there's like loads of room for that story to come out more about the sport. Like, and a lot of people are kind of coming to this sport now. It's obviously massively surging in popularity, particularly in this part of the world with the games here and just an explosion in accessibility to the coverage of the sport. But there's always going to be the focus on Antonio Brown and Leonard Fournette and Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo. But actually, the stories of this season's Jason Bell is actually a phenomenally interesting story where players are absolutely playing for their entire livelihood, for their family, for the history and tradition of the tiny little towns that some of them come from. And like when you remember back to that battle to get a place on the team, despite the fact that they've come after you in free agency, what's your mindset like?
You know, for me, it was always a thing where I responded well to challenges. Other guys have other things they focus on, but for me, I was never going to back down from a challenge. And I was always a fighter in the way that I was never going to let myself down, because I knew the kind of effort I would put out. I knew how tough I could play or prepare. So I wouldn't let myself down, because I knew if I let myself down, I couldn't live with myself. Regardless of the situation and the outcome, I had to be responsible for myself and my actions. So because of that, I was always going to outwork the other man. I was always going to give more, because I just had that in me. And that was the thing that allowed me to play so long. Maybe other guys were more talented and all that kind of stuff, but I just outworked them. When it got tough, when it got nasty, when it got hard, I just sucked it up and battled through. And I mean, that's just what it takes in football. It's that kind of sport. It's long. Things happen. You have ups and downs, and you just have to be focused in on what you know you have to do and execute. And you can't let anything or anybody knock you off that path.
Did they sign you as a cornerback and turn you into a safety? Is that what happened in that training camp?
And when I went to New York, yeah, I signed as a corner. And then the defensive coordinator said, you know, I've been watching you for years, and you'd be a better safety. And I was thinking, That's cool, but no, I'm not ready for that. Next thing you know, in training camp, I was a safety, and he was actually right. I was a pretty good, decent free safety. He saw something in me. I have to give him credit for that. But I had great teammates around me that played the position that helped my learning curve. They really helped me out technique-wise, being able to line up defenses, because it's a lot different at safety. You got to sit back there. You're the quarterback of the defense. You're lining people up, making sure the defense is run correctly, and you're looking at it from a different angle. At corner, you're seeing it from the corner. At safety, you're seeing the whole field. So that learning curve, playing with guys that can teach you that quickly and being able to open up your vision and see the whole field is very important, and I had that.
So why is the safety market at the moment so collapsed? Why does nobody seem to want to pay safeties like right across the board? All sorts of safeties are just being completely devalued. Some of them because of coming back from injury. Some of them because they're protesting and they're being blackballed. Some of them because, I don't know if the Seahawks understand exactly what they're doing. I don't know. Why has safety become a position that the league doesn't value at the moment?
I think they do value safety. I think every year you have a situation in free agency where a position group doesn't move as fast as you would like. So they start to, and people start to question, well, what is it about the safety market or what is it about the safety position? But as you look across some of these rosters, there's a lot of young, good safeties, and there's a lot of good safeties on contracts. So if you're talking about a guy who's a starter who comes to the market that wants starter money, but he's viewed as a backup, teams will say, I'd rather develop the young guys I have on my roster. And that happens. Every year you see a position group like that. I actually think safety is more important now because safeties are more interchangeable. And what I mean by that, before you had a free and a strong safety and a guy that just stayed around the line of scrimmage and was more of an enforcer and hitter, and then you had a guy that was more of a skilled guy in the back. But now these guys have to do the same thing. They have to be interchangeable unless that's what your defense calls for, like a Seattle or Atlanta, where they play a lot of three deep and they can have a guy like that in the box. But safety's got to do it all, and I think there's a lot of young, good safeties. It was just that year in free agency where you didn't see a lot of action.
If you were advising Earl Thomas, or if you were advising Seattle, what would your position on that situation be?
Well, you know, Earl Thomas is arguably the best center field safety in football. And he still affects games. He's still great. But, you know, one thing I know is I don't know how to spend other people's money. And when it comes down to managing that salary cap, managing your contracts, it's, you know, age comes into play, you know, and the NFL, you don't pay on past production. You know, you pay on future production, and whatever they value that as, that's what they'll pay for. And he's getting up there in years, but he's still one of the best. So I think that's the issue. It's not about his production. It's about what they value it as far as the dollar amount. And, you know, Seattle's going through some changes now. With the old guard, and he was a part of that, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's just a really interesting situation. When the NFL were touring Europe a little bit earlier on, we had him in studio, and it seemed like he actually just wanted to finish out his career with Seattle and kind of have the team pay due deference to what he's put into them. But like, you can totally see if you were a contender signing him and maybe getting a, you know, not giving up two first-round picks, which seems to be, or one first-round pick even, which seems to be the price you got to pay for him at the minute. Like, you can see why you would like to have an Earl Thomas in your locker room. A couple of quick questions before we let you go. Are there any specific defensive trends that you've seen over the last couple of years? Like, you mentioned, obviously, Atlanta, and you mentioned the Seahawks. There's been a lot of copycat defenses looking at what they're doing. The 49ers are doing it as well. Is there a reaction this year in the opposite direction? Is there a different trend? Where do you think the next great defensive wave of coaching is going to come from?
Oh, wow. That's the next wave of coaching. I mean, defensively, Atlanta could be good, man. That Marquand Manuel, I like him and like what he's doing. So as far as coaching and staff, I like those guys over there. But what I see as a trend is everybody's been talking about these the RPOs, the run-pass options. and offenses are doing, and everybody's implementing that into their offense. So defenses have to find a way to stop it. And I think what I've been hearing is everybody spent their offseason kind of figuring out how to stop that. And what I think you're going to see defenses do is basically take something away. You're going to start see them take away the pass or the run and make the offense force them to beat them in the other direction. But they're going to choose what option they're going to allow them to play. Instead of letting them have both, they're going to choose and say, we're not going to let them do this. And that helps defenses because sometimes you don't need to be so reactive. You know, you need to be the one that forces the issue. And I think a lot of defenses now, when they get that run pass option a couple of times a game, they're going to choose what option you can do as an offense. And then it's all about executing.
So if you've got good corners, you force the opposition into running the ball or you force them into throwing the ball rather. So you stack the box and leave your corners one on one thinking, I'm okay, I've got Jalen Ramsey back here, do your best.
Yeah, well, if you got a good defensive backfield, you want to play man. That's the easiest way to stop it because man coverage kills the pass and the run pass option and frees up a defender to make a tackle. You don't want to have their outside linebacker playing zone because that's what the quarterback's reading. So if you can play man back there, that's the best way to do it. And the teams that play great man-to-man coverage can do that.
And some quick questions for you. Who's going to be the rookie defensive player of the year and who's going to be the defensive player of the year?
Oh, rookie defensive player of the year. So you said defensive player and rookie defensive player.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you're making it tough on me. I mean, I'm going back with Aaron Donald, man. Aaron Donald gets on that field. He's on a whole nother level. And because the quickest way to the quarterback is right in front of him, Aaron Donald does that, and, you know, he really dominates that that position better than anybody. Rookie-wise, you know, I'm thinking, and you might have to help me out, the linebacker that got drafted to Chicago.
First-rounder. Is it Roquan Smith?
Roquan Smith. And he, you know, he hasn't – took him a while to get into camp, but what I know, I played in Vic Fangio's defense before, and those linebackers are very important. And that's why they brought him in there. He can be a guy that makes a lot of plays for that defense. Vic Fangio can find a lot of ways to be creative and let that guy go out there and ball out.
Would you pay Aaron Donald quarterback money, given that's what he's asking for? If he is like the most destructive player in football, maybe the thing to do is to lock him down, make him your franchise player, and decide that like the coaching staff there is brilliant enough that whoever plays quarterback for them is going to be pretty good. They're going to score points. The one thing they need to do is lock down a defense.
Yeah, well, as a player, yes, I would want him to get quarterback money. Give him all the money. He deserves all the checks. You know, the reason they've been able to be successful is because they got a quarterback on a rookie deal so they can go out and spend some money. Aaron Donald's 27 years old. You know, the Rams feel like they're getting the best years out of him, and they'll pay for that. But as far as locking into a really long-term deal that costs them a lot of money, I don't know how comfortable they are with that. He's worth every dollar right now. But once again, when you talk about these deals, you got to plan for the future. And that's why I am not a GM.
Last question for you. Obviously, unfortunately, last year, so much of the football action was overshadowed by the protests and by the reaction really to the protests. I mean, the protests are absolutely fine. It's the whole point of having freedom is the freedom to protest. Are you concerned this year that, again, the players end up being political pawns and become victims of the political narrative outside and that actually, you know, they end up losing status within their communities when really they should be being considered heroes?
You know, I've been in the locker room a long time, and one thing I love about my brothers in the locker room is we're a resilient bunch, and we stick together, and the organizations stick together because that's how you have to be successful. And I think that there's a lot going on in the United States that has nothing to do with football, and I think that football will be fine, players will be fine. They just need to continue to stay together and stand together because that's what makes teams work. And that's, you know, that's what makes built Super Bowl teams, and that's what guys are focused on. You know, I spoke about this last year, and it's easy to find, you know how I feel, but I just think that that guys find a way, man, and guys stick together, and that's the beauty of this. Nothing will pull them apart. Guys will get through it as a team.
Yeah, yourself and Elsie were unbelievably articulate about this when it happened last year. Did you get much support in the aftermath of that, or was there pushback from people?
It was a lot of support. You know, it was early on. The narrative hadn't been framed necessarily. So it was a lot of support. And, you know, just like anything, like I said before, it's like me and OC were in our locker room, and we figured it out together, just like these guys will in their locker room.
Yeah, well, look, it was great. And if anybody wants to see it, we'll tweet the link to the YouTube video as well. Great to have you with us, and I hope you enjoy the crack and dairy next time you're over, Jason. Thanks a million.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks very much for being with us this week. I hope you enjoyed Jason Bell and Kian Fahey's preview of the AFC. Next week, it's OCU and Eura and Kian Fahey having a look at the NFC. Our show this week is brought to you courtesy of Subway, official partner of the NFL London Games. Make sure you stay tuned to our social channels. We're going to be giving away tickets to the three London Games over the next 4 weeks or so on our social channels and, of course, on the radio as well. But that's been the first and return of the NFL show here on Off the Ball. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, feel free to rate, share and like. And if you didn't, let us know at Jerry Gilroy on Twitter. Cheers.
NFL on Off the Ball with Subway. Be the real MVP. Watching the game with a meat beast platter.